Welcome to Loopcasts. This episode, my guest of honor is Natel Deng. Natel is an HR coach, consultant on agile HR projects. She's a keynote speaker. She's also the writer of the book, Agile HR. She's also one of our speakers at our upcoming Loop Summit. Welcome, Natel. How are you?
I'm very well. It's fabulous to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. You just had an electricity cutout, but
I did. Yes, we're back. We're back.
We're back live.
We're back, yeah. And we're online.
All right. Okay. I'm really actually curious now that we had this. I'm shuffling my questions. So, whenever something like unexpected or like catastrophic happens at work, and you feel like you're overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I think quite interesting in terms of where we are in the world at the moment or what's happening in the world, right. And also the topic that I'm talking about. So yeah. I think that, I think you can't not get caught up in the moment a bit, you know, so there is, and so there's also the need to sort of respond to whatever the catastrophe is. Right. But what's really interesting is I think the concept of agile and agile mindset and agile thinking is to see that these kind of things are going to, like, this will happen in life, and that actually you need to be able to adapt and respond, and that if this changes your plans, it's not the end of everything. It's that there's an opportunity to now go in a new direction there, or you need to respond and actually pivot to be able to still, you know, get to the solution that you wanted. Or, and this is what's starting to come out a lot around the pandemic, have you heard much about agile anti-fragility? So this is this new kind of mindset which says not only do you need to be resilient in times of change and chaos, actually, if you can look for the opportunity when chaos and change happens, then that's how you can really kind of rise and also be very successful in times of change. And so there's this, and there's a framework that a lot of people in the agile community talk to, and it's by a person called Dave Snowden, mm-hmm. and it's called the Kinefin framework. And it talks about the idea that during your working day, or you know, at any one time, you might be faced with multiple problems, right. And actually, you might need to respond in different ways all at the same time, particularly in the work environment. Mm-hmm. And he calls out different problems, and he calls some of them these chaos, you know, novel chaos problems, and they're the ones that just, they're like a big, like, then the lights have all gone off. What do you do? And actually, in that situation, you just got to respond, don't you? You've got to make sure people are safe. You've got to just kind of act and, you know, take control. But actually, once you've got, you know, you've got people safe, you kind of understand what's going on, then you start to analyze the problem, and then you start to kind of work. So then you would move to a different kind of working model. And one of the other domains that he talks about is complexity. And complexity is where agile helps. So complex problems is where you don't have the answers at the start. Actually, you're not really sure. There's multiple ways to solve the problem. Actually, you don't even know what the problem is necessarily. And things like, you know, building a hybrid workplace, you know, finding talent in a multi, you know, really competitive environment across the globe, or, you know, enriching the well-being of your employees. These are all complex problems, which actually could mean so many different things to different people, and they're really complex. So the only way to approach a complex problem is to work in a more agile way, where you need to test, you need to experiment, you need to get data. And then once you gather data, you can start to move forward and start to solve the problem. So actually, the way that I respond to these situations now, I think, has been very influenced on that framework, and also just, you know, that you can, depending on the problem you face in the working, you know, working environment or your life, you can approach it in a different way based on what you know about it and what might be the most appropriate way of working around it.
This just reminded me of a cartoon I saw by, I think in one of the presentations of Scott DeWindy. He's also one of our Loop Summit presenters. And in the cartoon, you see like there's a line of people and everybody chooses, you know, the sign that says easy way. And that's the wrong way. They like they fall off of a cliff. There's the, you know, the complex but the right way that
Yeah, exactly. And definitely a lot of you know, traditionally we've often approached problems kind of like we've worked on them for a lot in the past. So either very simple, you know, okay, this has happened and so we should do this and that will fix the problem, you know. Or maybe a little bit more complicated. So we analyze it, we look at, you know, and okay, there's, we've got three solutions, you know, which one are we going to go through and work, you know, but actually that way of working, if you've got to truly innovate or you've got a, you know, a multifaceted problem or the whole environment has changed like we now have in our working world, then actually it's complex. And so those ways of working are just not going to get you anywhere. They're just going to, yeah, you're going to go off the cliff or you're just going to do the same thing that you did before. And that's not going to find you, you're not going to beat your competitor or you're not going to invent the new product that's going to, you know, win the market, or you're not going to find the best people in the talent war, you know, all this kind of stuff. So the more we realize a lot of our problems are complex and approach them that way, the better. Yeah.
I love the framework. I think this podcast is helping me the most and hopefully the listeners as well. So here's the next question. We were just before we started the podcast, we were talking about how, planning our day sometimes goes, you know, wrong or off. Let's just put it that way. And then, you know, this time affluence crisis is actually affecting pretty much everyone. Like we're all feeling that we're not in control of our calendars. So do you have some sort of routines or rules that that help you keep a healthy time affluence?
Yeah, definitely. So my big kind of sort of, well, I don't know, advice or top tip, I suppose is a better way of saying it, top tip, is to embrace something called Kanban. So Kanban is a kind of visualization of work tool and also a way that you can break problems down and also and manage your workflow. So it's primarily a way that you kind of oversee your workflow. And it sort of started many years ago actually in Japan, and it's been sort of very much embraced by the Agile community and is one of the main methods that Agile teams use to manage their work and manage their workflow. But what you can do is you can actually do a personal Kanban. And this is actually a really nice way to feel a little bit more in control of situations that we're not really, you know, like the days that we have now. And also to get a little bit better of understanding how much work can you actually do each day, you know, what really is possible, because there's so much that we want to get done now, you know. And I think the pandemic brought that out. You know, you're at home, you're working from home, so you're trying to get all your work done for work, for actual your business. Then you've got the kids or the dogs and the cooking and the clean, you know, so, and it all falls in on each other now because you're all in, you know, you're in these new environments. And actually, there's only about five things that you're going to get done that day. And you set out with the idea that you're going to do 20. And generally, you know, you get about five done. So the personal Kanban is a really nice way to kind of visualize that and get used to committing to a realistic amount of work. And so and there's a few, I can send you some links to share with your audience. And but what a Kanban primarily has a few columns. And so you've got your backlog. So this is all the things that you'd like to get done at some stage. Nice. And this is where, you know how, I don't know about you, but there's all these things that I want to do, you know, and they'll range from reading a new book through to starting a new business through to, you know what I mean? Like through to okay. just, I don't know, taking the the dog to the vet, you know, like, so it really, you know, they range, don't they? And there's all these things that are in your head. So that's a nice way of actually just, you just write them all down. You just capture them all. And you might not ever get to any of them, but it's good to have them written down because then they're not in your head anymore. So you've got your backlog and then you have your to-do doing done. And the to-do is the things that you're going to do next. You've kind of prioritize them, you know that you've got to do them next. Your doing is the work that you've got on at the moment. Right. And of course, the done is something that you've actually got done. And then in your doing column, you try and set a work in progress. So how many things should I really have be on the go at the same time? Right. What should I really be doing? And realistically, you shouldn't have, you know, if it's a personal Kanban, you probably shouldn't have few more than 3 to 5, because that means you're just multitasking and you're not getting things completed. So I would encourage everyone to start a personal Kanban board. It's actually a really effective way to get things out of your head. And what happens is you can then change things. So of course you're working, like today, my day kind of changed quite suddenly because of something for a client. So there was various things that I had planned to do. I need to be realistic. I can't now get them done today. I've needed to bring in this urgent thing. Okay, now I reprioritize and I reassess, when will I be able to get to these other things? Are they now as important as I thought they were? And so you constantly reprioritize your day. Yeah,
I love this. You know why? Because we're developing an app and we're managing our backlog.
Oh, there you go. That's exactly, it's perfect for it. Yeah.
So good. We do that on Trello boards.
Exactly. Trello board. So people can, people even have personal Trello boards, and I personally use a certain tool that I've got, and it's exactly like your Trello board that you got for your project, but it's your life basically. And it's things to work
this.
A treat.
It cracks me up. I've been laughing the whole time you're talking because I love this. Okay. So maybe we'll talk about this a little bit, but can you give me 3 habits that you think that best affect your performance at work and keeps you sane at the same time?
3 habits that impact my work and keep me sane. I like the keep the sane part. That's good. I do think that, and this touches into the topic of wellness, doesn't it? There's so much connection of how you feel as a person and your kind of general well-being as a person and your work. And a good friend of mine talks a lot about how well-being shouldn't be separate. It shouldn't be seen as something that you do over here. And then, you know, then at work, it's, you know, it's a separate thing, and it's, you've got, you know, you've just got your work self. It interconnects, and very much it's about the flow of work and how you're approaching your whole day. I also think that we need to be more aware that well-being isn't something that you can just always have as good and perfect. You know, like, we go up and down in life, you can't just be resilient and always be able to, you just have times when it's a bit harder and you're not as strong, and then other times where you do feel strong, and then there's things that you do to help in the times that you're not so strong. And other times when you're feeling, you know, you are feeling strong, you can face some of those problems a bit more head on and a bit easier. So I think there's a few myths about well-being, that it's not just going to a yoga class, you know, it's kind of thinking a bit more holistically, I suppose, is the message. So in saying all of that, for me personally, it's I work hard, and I'm just a worker, you know, and that's, so I don't, my work-life balance, probably for some people, is they think, oh my God, you'd have no work-life balance. But for me, I love my work. I'm really into it. I have a lot of work on, and that's me. So I get energized by my work, but at the same time, I've got to force moments where I just get away from it. So one of the big things is actually doing gym session, like classes. So actual, and it has to be a class, because if it's just up to me to go for a run or do some kind, that it's not going to happen. So I have to be committed and booked in for a class, and it can be on Zoom. So we're throughout the pandemic and lockdown, I was doing it on Zoom, but now I'm allowed to go back to the actual gym, which is really exciting. And it's a class like, you know, I don't know, Pilates or, you know, spin and weights and this kind of thing. That so, and what I love about it, and particularly at the moment, because I've actually got to drive down the road to get there, is it just enforces this break in the day, because I'm someone that could keep working quite late. But if I'm committed to it and it's in the diary, then I've got to go, you know, I feel, responsible and accountable for going. So for me, it's committing to some kind of exercise that, you know, you can't say no to. So if it's up to me and I'm just going to go for a run, it's not going to happen, because I'll get to the time, oh no, I'm busy, I won't go for the run. But if I'm booked into a class, yeah. The other one is sleep. So you've got to get, I'm not a great sleeper. So I'm not one of these people that will give you all these, you know, oh yes, I sleep so many hours every night. And, you've got to get sleep. And so if you're not a good sleeper like me, because I'm very active, my mind is always working. And I think, so I'm a very light sleeper. So do things to help you sleep. And that could be anything from setting up your bedroom in a certain way through to, you know, switching, getting off computers and screens by a certain time, or maybe there's certain teas that you can drink, all that kind of stuff. So help yourself sleep. That would be my biggest piece of advice. And you want a treat, didn't you? So,
yes.
Yeah. So a gym class or an exercise class that you can't say no to, sleep. And then I do think there's something about, so I embrace the idea of, so this, and this comes from agile thinking. So, I see life and career now as just this kind of adventure of little mini experiments, testing, learning, and kind of grow. So for now, when something doesn't work out for me, I'm much better at seeing it as a little mini experiment that, you know, I don't, you know, it's all right. There's lots of, you know, what can I learn from this? How do I take that into my next experience that I'm going to go into? And because nothing's a complete failure. You can always move on. You can always, you know, either get some learning from it or decide to go on to the next thing or take something from that and then make something more of it. So, yeah, I think I see life a bit more now as a series of iterations and mini experiments, which kind of helps, because now I don't think, oh, my God, it didn't work. It's all over. It's a failure. I'm kind of like, oh, no, we can, you know, that's okay. Okay, that didn't go so well. Oh, well, why is that? Let's have a look at why, and let's take that forward into the next thing I'm going to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, there are the grays, right?
That's yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
I suppose you have to be older to get more comfortable with that thinking.
I know.
When I was younger, I was a bit more, oh, God, you know. So I maybe getting older is a good thing to – that's a tip. Not caring so much anymore, you know.
I was just going to say why I held myself back.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Cool. So I know.
Growing older.
Growing older. It's a good thing to do in some ways.
So my next question is about another habit, actually. So what's an unusual habit or an absurd thing that you love?
An unusual habit or an absurd thing that I love. I don't know. It depends on what people consider as unusual.
Some people get quite personal here. So like, okay, feel free to go.
Unusual. I like, I don't know, toasted sourdough with Vegemite and avocado. But any like what Australians will probably connect to that, but any other part of the world, they all go, "Ooh, what's that?" So
that's a like a sandwich?
Yeah. So, well, no, you'd get a, so you'd get a, it was just a piece of bread. And ideally for me, it would be sourdough or rye. And then you would toast that. And then I personally like a little bit of butter. And then you put Vegemite, which is this yeast extract. It's black. And it's a quite as distinct, unusual flavor if you've never had it before. And generally, if you didn't have it as a child, you're not going to like it when you taste it later on in life. So generally, if I bring this to anyone in another country out of Australia, they go, oh my God, that's disgusting. Yeah. Oh. And then I put avocado on top of it as well, which is, yeah, so that combination, or we would say combo in Australia. And we would say avo as well for the avocado. So. So I would say, so it actually, we would break it down into having a toast with Vegemite avo combo. And then, but it was very interesting. So I had an Australian friend stay just the other week. And of course she loved it. And she was, oh yeah. Oh my God. Have you got that? Oh, please. Can I have that? I haven't had it for years. So, and I don't, just for anyone listening, I don't live in Australia any moment, but I come from Australia. So yeah. So that's unusual.
I have the translation now. I'll try it.
Yeah.
I love the elbow part.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer to this next question. It will have something to do with agile, I think, but I'm trying it no matter what. So if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
I think it would say, for me, it'd be something about empathy and equity and understanding the experience of others. So the biggest learning I've had from bringing Agile into the world of HR in particular is, and this I think relates a lot to your topic of sort of wellness and how do you develop, you know, how do you enrich that for people, is that so much of sort of the things that come from design thinking and also from agile product development is about how do you understand the user's experience and how do you go around solving problems for your customer and that user. And to do that, you've got to really step into the shoes of that person and understand how do they engage with either the product that you've developed or in the workplace, the employee experience that you've got or you've created or the journey. And that could be anything from what's the first day like and what's the onboarding experience through to, you know, how am I maintaining my work-life balance, you know, through to how do I develop myself for my next job? How do I become a manager? All those kind of things. So they're all experiences. And what's so interesting is bringing these techniques into HR and getting HR to go, all right, how do we understand the real problems that people face in their day-to-day work? And how do you fix those for people and help people be great in their job? And you can only do that by truly stepping away from your HR kind of mind and viewpoint and stepping into the shoes of what's going on for people in your organization. And that could be a senior leader, but it also is someone that's, you know, in all kinds of jobs in the organization. So, and I then put that into society that, you know, if we're going to, you know, I'm a big kind of, I want society to be healthy and I want people to, you know, have a good life. And I think we can only do that if we start to really empathize with the experience that other people have. And so open our minds a bit to what other people go through so we can then understand how do we create a way of life that can help them, but as well as us. And we're all in this together, aren't we? You know, and I think the pandemic brought that out and some of the other big issues that we face in the world that we've got to help each other get through it. So, and we can't just look after ourselves because actually that doesn't get us anywhere. So yeah, so mine would be something like, I don't know, love the person next to you, or I don't know, step into the shoes of others. Yeah, empathy. Yeah, in big lights. Yeah, go and get some empathy.
Hopefully not the last one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. You know, get over yourself and go and love others. Yeah, that kind of something like that.
Okay, so we're not getting you into exercising. That I understood. Okay, perfect. So one more question, and this is more about the HR that you work with. During one of the seminars that I attended with Josh Berson, he was talking about how this one client CEO started like showing his pet's photos to mm-hmm. his entire team. And then that started out like a, you know, big movement of everybody sharing their own pets. And
okay,
like,
yeah.
Everybody started like talking about it, and they started sharing about it. And this was during the pandemic, of course. And then that really was the single most important well-being hack we had, said the CEO. So I'm just, you know, that listening to that, I would love to know if you came across such a surprising well-being hack in one of the organizations that you work with. It doesn't have to be something like this, but mm-hmm. anything that worked beautifully.
Mm. Yeah, so I think what's interesting with that is that was, I'll just comment on that slightly before we go forward, is that for me that kind of links into what I was just sort of saying around that understanding experiences. So that was a connecting of, we all have joint experiences, we have pets, and it was opening up some vulnerability around, hey, we now, we're on Zoom and we're working from home, or we can't be in the office and our life is part of our work. And so what you have seen in the pandemic, and I think you can't go back now. So what I find really interesting is that the world of work is fundamentally transforming, and we're kind of in the middle of it at the moment. And everyone talks about, oh, going back to work or going back to the office, but it's never going to be the same, because we've had these experiences that have now moved us beyond that. And we're all talking about, oh, what's the hybrid model, or what's the, well, it's all happening, you know, it's just transforming, and we don't quite know what the model is going to be. It's probably going to be multiple models. But we need to let go of this idea that we're also going to go back to work and it will just be our work selves, and our life selves is something separate. The world is, the two have combined. And I think the pet story brings that out, because people saw another side to their CEO that they then connected to, and they all started to show a personal story to each other. And this is how you connect on such a different level. So I think, and that allows people to be more open about their wellness and their well-being, and talk about maybe, you know, their health, their mental health, as well as their physical health. So I think that's for me, that plays into all of those things. I will just sort of go, so we've got a lot of organizations exploring what's going to be their model for hybrid solution. And a big part of it is in embracing this idea that you possibly, people could work from anywhere. But when should they come together? You know, if they're not in the office, and what does that look like? And could we source talent from all over the world, and that's okay, and they collaborate in new ways. So everyone's exploring this, and there's some really interesting test cases out there. One thing in terms of a kind of well-being one, that one company I know that's a bit smaller, so they were able to, they've run an experiment on when should they be in the office, when can they work from home, and what does that kind of look like? And they decided on 3 days of the week were this much more self-select as a team. You decide where you're working from, generally probably from home or a shared office or on Zoom, these kind of things. Then one day of the week was a deep working day. So again, you did that from anywhere, but that day is you just get work done, and you don't have any meetings. No one's allowed to set a meeting. Even the senior executives have to uphold the kind of the promise, and everyone just gets some work done on one of these days. And that's really amazing, because often it's maybe a few hours but this whole day is dedicated to getting work done. And then Friday they chose, but it could be any, there's another day where it was the social day. And it was interesting that they chose Friday. So Friday was the day that you aim to get meetings done, and you aim to get them done together, most likely in the office, but it doesn't, you know, and because Friday's the social day. And people were more open to the idea of being in the office, seeing other people. Maybe you might even do something social afterwards because it's Friday. And so I thought that was really interesting and just slightly kind of just, I just like that, this idea of kind of all committing to, particularly I think the deep work day, because we really struggled to get work done because we've got so many meetings, so many other things going on. And this kind of commitment by a whole organization to, you know, to work in a deep way, no interruptions, I think is a great kind of way forward. Yeah.
Perfect. This reminded me of Daniel Gilbert's book, Stumbling on Happiness. And he talks about it there too. Like he talks about how having an experience totally transforms you and makes you a new person. So you can't look at it in the way that
exactly. And I think that's where we are in work now. So there's a really good article I read just recently about, you know, trauma to transformation. And it's, you know, we're sort of deluding ourselves by this that we keep talking about going back to normal, or the new normal, going back to normal, or going back to the office. It's just not going to happen, because in particular, while there's still some traditional mindsets towards how we do work, and think technology has fundamentally changed every company. So even if you don't work in technology, your whole company now runs on technology in some way. And the pandemic accelerated that, doesn't it? So we all had to find out ways to still get work done, but not be in the same, you know, whether it's an office or just the same location, because we couldn't. So you've had this huge acceleration of the digitalization of the employee experience. And this also meant that people were given opportunities where they were like, oh, well, can we give you a problem to solve? And people just came together and solved problems without, you know, necessary, you know, heavy management or, you know, a big strategy or a cascading goals, you know, all these kind of things that corporations do. And so we've had a lot of people that have had accountability, ownership, the ability to run with things, not be so kind of micromanaged. And that actually showed that people can do great things if given the means. And I think, and that flows into a lot around Agile, where we talk about empowered teams, you know, people self-organizing, we hire great people, so then let them organize and get things done. And there's a discipline around that, but actually that leads to amazing innovation. And if we think about where the market's going, it's all about creating great products that are going to, you know, lead the market or disrupt the market or innovate the market. And right. You can only do that by sort of smaller, you know, innovative, fast-moving teams coming together and, you know, allowed to really kind of own things and be accountable. So I think the world has seen a whole new way of working that we don't fully understand yet, but we're at some organizations are more, you know, open to it and doing things with it. But also this whole idea of the office. Yeah. We're, you know, no one will go back to exactly what we did before. It just doesn't, you can't, as you said, the world has changed for us. We see things differently. And I think that's just so interesting. Yeah.
So, I agree with you. I wonder with this next question, more about you. So what is one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made?
Investments? Well, there could be so many things. I could range between going electric with how I drive my car. That's transformed my life, and I think is just, it's such an amazing thing to do. So I encourage everyone to do it. Go electric.
Wow, cool.
It's really cool. I have a techie partner, and he has set me up to be able to run business in a very digitalized way. We've got these amazing cameras, and, you know, you've seen me with my microphone, and I've really embraced how to do digital communication well. And I think everything that we've invested in here has been transformative, and it's made working this way more fun, but also it means that you can just deliver great content to people, you can engage people, and you can connect with people in much better way if you've got the digital tools to do it. So that would be a really good investment. Getting some rescue dogs before we got these rescue dogs just before the pandemic started, actually. And they are just wonderful. And I think everyone should have a dog in their life. It does make you feel good about the world.
Yeah, I hope my partner doesn't listen to you. He tells me this every day. Beautiful. Maybe two final questions. One of them is, we talked a lot about recommendations today. And what are some of the bad recommendations you hear in your profession? And what would you tell people instead?
So bad recommendations, and what would I tell people to sort of stay away from or something?
Yes, and then you will start, I think, to talk. Maybe an hour, right? No, that's
there's been plenty over the years.
Yeah. What's the biggest one, so to say?
What would be the biggest one? I would say that there's this idea. What about, so for me, there's this thing about being caught up with this idea that you should know exactly what your career is and your career path and what job you should do in life. And, you know, and everyone's always in search for the perfect career and the perfect job, and it doesn't actually exist. So, and actually, rather than, and so this, you know, and, you know, if we still do it, what do you want to be when you grow up, you know, and then what do you want to, what are you going to go to university for? Cause what are you going to do as a result of that? And I don't know, most people I know, whatever they studied at university, they now do something totally different. I can see you say,
what did you study?
I studied economics.
There we have it. I studied math.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So, and if you told me that I was being HR, I would have laughed. And I think because actually, and this idea that career goes in one direction and it doesn't, does it? It's you know, it's a squiggly line. It goes up, down, and around and back again. And I think the more that people can feel comfortable with the idea that it is okay to do a sideways move in your career or go into a new kind of industry and not have as much experience in that industry, but bring skills and experiences from what you've done before. And also the idea that the things we do outside of work actually help us develop. So our volunteering or the meetups that we run or the podcasts that we do and all these kind of things are all part of the whole package of what you bring to careers. So I think one of the worst recommendations is, you know, having the plan, you know, what's your career plan? Have you decided where you're going? Have you mapped that out? Because that doesn't really exist. And actually it's about building up skills and experiences, following interests, and then being able to take up opportunities as they arise. So I think, and for me, that then feeds into a whole world of old HR traditional processes that exist in companies that, you know, are just not the way to run a company. So, you know, managed career pathways, you know, enforced performance reviews and ratings and discuss and all these things that are very ways of sort of controlling how people work, where actually the more we open up and allow people to, you know, bring them their best selves, be that, you know, give their best contribution, and understand that it's actually having a much more flexibility, you know, bringing skills together to solve a problem on a more adaptive and flexible basis, rather than everyone has to be in this particular job, in this particular band, and be on this particular career pathway. You know, all of those things don't relate now to the way that organizations are growing and developing. So a long-winded way of answering your question.
Beautiful. No, I totally believe this, because like in by 2030 we all know like the gig economy, the freelance economy,
the gig economy, exactly
it's gonna explode,
and everyone's talks now about the side hustle, don't they, or what's your side hustle, and these are all just reflections of the fact that career is not one thing, right, and it's not one job, and it's not a job for life, and it's not also going up the ladder in one particular job, you know, and the more we sort of embrace, because some of that is also a bit uncomfortable, because it means that possibly in your life you might go into a job where you don't have a higher title, or you might not be paid as much money, or you know, or the progression is different. It's maybe slightly to the side or down, or, but actually the opportunity that it gives you, or the experience and where you go from there as a result, is amazing, but you've got to be okay to embrace that. And I think, and that's uncomfortable. It's a bit, you know, it's scary a bit and vulnerable. So the more we help people do that, I think the better. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was interviewing Melissa Geeky. She's the Unilever HR VP for Turkey and Iran. Yep. And she was talking like how she embraced reverse mentoring, because she believes there's no career, like there's not a career ladder anymore. Just as you said, you know, like she believes in collecting experiences. So this sounds so similar to me, and I love I think, Natal, you sound so fluid, you know, like it's like anything goes, you know, like I love the philosophy that we talked about in the past. Like I think 30 minutes. So this, I love this. So maybe one final question before we wrap it up. So in the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life? I think we touched upon this, and, but let's see if anything new comes up.
New. Okay. What new belief or habit in the last 5 years? That got, that's like so a massive time. It's like, what five, I suppose. So what's interesting. So for me, So in the last 5 years, I've probably lived in 3 different countries or something. So I've moved around a bit. I've changed houses. I've changed jobs. I've changed, and I've, so there's two things I'm going to come out of this, because actually by reflecting on this one thing that I was going to talk about, I've now thought of something else. Actually, that's what I'm going to talk about. All right, so I'm going to, we all face big decisions in our lives, and sometimes we're not happy with something that's going on in our career or our life, and we have to make a decision around it. You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to move? Am I going to get a new job? Or am I going to leave a partner or something like this? So, and they're these big, big sort of moments in our life. And often we say to ourselves, oh, well, I want to be happy, you know, so, and you know, it's about being happy. However, the happiness part is a little bit harder to control, because that can be vary, and you might even make the decision, you might leave the job, start a new one, and you're not instantly happy as a result, you know, all these kind of things. And a little while ago, I had to make a big decision, and that related to my business, and I had to move on. And what was interesting at the time is I read an article by someone that is sort of writes about philosophy, Oliver Berkman, and he's got some great little books. They're very accessible. And he wrote about the sort of the things that he's learned over the years. And one of them was that actually sometimes the biggest decision is you've got to burn bridges. You've got to make, you know, it feels really big, you know, and actually it's not about being happy. It's about, can you grow? So ask yourself, if I continue in this situation, can I really grow as a person? Am I going to, you know, can I, and growing is not always about being happy. It's a, you know, it's about developing. It's about exploring new things. It's about, it's not always even good things, you know, it can be bad as well, as you grow as a person. And I think that's a really nice question to ask yourself at those times, you know, rather than saying, oh, am I happy? Ask, can you grow? And if you can't grow in that situation because you're stuck in a job that you're, that not, is not going anywhere, or there's a working relationship that's not working very well, or the business maybe is not as successful as you thought it would be, and you need, so, and they're big decisions to break away from. You maybe invested a lot of your time, a lot of your money, a lot of your effort, all those things. You know, ask yourselves, can I grow? And if I leave and if I do something else, will that give me more opportunities to grow as a person? So by embracing that mindset, that's led me to some pretty big things over the last 5 years. So that will be something I'll finish with.
That really spoke to my heart. Thank you, Natal. I'm facing a lot of big decisions. We're all facing difficulties.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily about just being happy or sad. It's about, can you keep growing as a person? Can you develop as a person? And that's a big thing to always ask, I think, in our career, because that also might lead to, you're not necessarily always going to take the job that's the bigger job or the higher title. It's the job where you can really grow as a person and develop and, you know, learn new things or do things that are kind of new interests or new experiences. And that's a different kind of decision, isn't it? So, yeah.
So inspiring, Natal. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
this was Natal Deng on Loopcast. And thanks. Thank you again for this wonderful, very inspiring 40 minutes with you. And looking forward to hosting you again at Loop Summit.
Yeah, really excited. That's it's coming up soon. Excellent. Yes. See you all there.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye, Natal.
Okay, bye.
You listen to Natal Deng on Loopcasts. Thank you, Natal, and have a good one.